Welcome to the Food, Family and Friends podcast, proudly presented by worldpodcasts.com. Now it's time to join your host, Vanessa Baxter.
Good morning and welcome to another episode of the Food, Family and Friends podcast. Of course, we are recording here at Podcasts New Zealand in Auckland. And today I've got a great guest here with me. Her name is Sarah and she is from the Love Food, Hate Waste campaign. And this is going to be a huge campaign push by the Auckland City Council here in New Zealand for the month of November. And it's all about educating people to re-look at their food and their baskets of food and their fridges of food, and to encourage them to think outside the box, cook up some leftovers, reuse the leftovers. If you've overcooked pasta, what you could do with it the next day. Don't just use the little broccoli florets, use the whole broccoli. You know, here in New Zealand, Kiwis are wasting 122,000 tons of food a year. Whoa, this is not good. So what can we do about it? What could you do about it at home? This is not just a Kiwi problem. So if you are listening from elsewhere around the world, and I know many of you are, this can be also a really exciting episode to listen to give you some inspiration and some ideas around shopping, preparing food, use of leftovers, use of ingredients, and making sure that you are not contributing to this crazy amount of food wastage. One third of all the food we buy as a world population gets wasted, thrown away. So I have a huge positive regard for Sarah, for the campaign that she is responsible for. She grew up loving to cook. This opportunity to take on board this job with Love Food, Hate Waste was really exciting for her, and she's loving testing all the recipes and trying things out and getting all the information up on Facebook and social media. So let's jump right into this interview. Love Food, Hate Waste. Hey Sarah, welcome to the studio.
Hi Vanessa.
Hey, lovely to have you here. We've been trying to connect for ages and it's so nice that we finally got together. And I just love what your whole business premise is all about, so I can't wait to share it with the listeners. It's all about loving food and hating waste and trying to reduce food waste in general. And you, I'm just not going to talk too much. I'm going to let you take over and tell us all about it and how you ended up doing this, because I know you've only been back in New Zealand for a year, haven't you?
Yeah, I recently spent the last 3 years living and working in Sydney doing an entirely different thing to what I'm doing now. I used to cover the professional sport of cycling, which is miles and miles away from not only the world of food, but the world of waste. So it's been quite a big learning curve for me recently. But basically, when I heard about the Love Food, Hate Waste campaign in New Zealand, I just knew that was something that I really wanted to be a part of.
So how did you hear it? So you came back. For what reason did you come back to New Zealand?
I'd had enough of Sydney.
Had enough, yeah. It's a pretty difficult city to live in, isn't it? It's fast-paced.
It is. It's busy. It's big. There are people everywhere. The traffic is worse than Auckland. Mm. I had a really wonderful time there, but I guess I always knew that I was going to come back to New Zealand.
Because you're here from here originally.
Yes.
Are you from Auckland originally?
No, I'm from Whakatane.
Whakatane. Awesome.
Yeah.
But you've settled in Auckland.
Yes.
Yeah. Have you got family here as well? Or
I have an aunt and uncle.
An aunt and uncle. Uncle. Okay.
But so I have moved around since I left Whakatane to go to university. I've moved around a lot and I did a stint in Auckland and just after the Christchurch earthquake.
Yeah.
I was originally living down there and then I was relocated up here for work. And so I have spent a year in Auckland previously. So I knew that I actually would like to come back here.
So what did you do at uni?
I did a Bachelor of Arts degree and I majored in International Relations and Media Studies.
Okay.
And then I went down this path of doing communications for the National Cycling Federation.
Yeah, that's awesome.
Yeah.
Were you into cycling?
I had an interest in cycling, yes. I wasn't a sort of a cyclist myself. Well, I have a bike and I ride, but I wasn't a competitive cyclist. I just sort of it was something that took my interest in. I was doing some work experience with them during my last year of university, and that turned into a job, which then sort of kept me occupied for the next few years. And then I basically got the opportunity to work for SBS in Australia, who only really cover two sports, and one is football and the other is cycling.
Football, of course. Football. Oh, do you mean soccer?
I mean soccer.
You mean soccer. I mean soccer. Yeah. No, that's cool. I'm just clarifying, because it is football, and my son, who's an avid player, keeps saying, "What's soccer, mum?" It's football. But because I'm Aussie, the whole Aussie rules thing to me is football. So I have to call football soccer. Otherwise I get confused.
Yeah. So soccer.
Okay.
So they did soccer and cycling, basically. Right. And so I had 3 years basically producing online content for a website that they had about cycling.
Ah, fantastic. Yeah. That's cool. Oh, hence why, okay, because Love Food, Hate Waste is very good on its online. You're everywhere. You're everywhere. So that makes sense. So you know what you're doing. That's the reason. Because many of us might be passionate about what we're doing, but not but sort of still on a learning curve on the whole how to market it and how to use social media.
Yes.
Like, I'm obviously a bit older than you. And it's Oh, I think so. And it's all a bit, you know, it's been a steep learning curve for me. I love it, but I'm still learning a lot. And then you see someone like you come along with Love Food, Hate Waste and think, how she just nailed that so quickly, but now I understand that was your background, that's what you were doing. So that kind of makes sense.
Yeah, and I think also growing up with social media.
Yes.
Like back in the day of MSN Messenger and MySpace and Bebo. And so sort of as each platform has evolved, you've kind of evolved with it. And so I think that's sort of this natural advantage that people of about my age have, in that it's been something that we've been using for quite a while now. Mm. And so you've sort of seen how things have progressed and changed over time. And you just sort of have that, I guess, greater understanding of, you know, how you use it and really the potential that it has.
Oh, I think you've nailed it. And I think the other thing is you never resisted it. So I see my kids, you know, and they'll turn around, "Oh, Mum, just because you didn't have devices when you were young, you don't get it." You know, when I'm trying to ask them to get off a device is usually when I get that response. And they're right, you know, because we resisted it. Oh, you know, companies don't need to have a Facebook page, and oh, it's ridiculous social media. This will never delve into the business realm. This is just a people waster. That's what your CEOs or your managers used to sort of feel, you know. It was like, oh, this is just how people are going to waste time at work, but this has got nothing to do with my business. And it's taken a while for them to realise actually it's not going away.
Yeah, you're spot on. And for Love Food, Hate Waste, Facebook is where a lot, probably the majority of our attention is going right now, because it's Facebook marketing and advertising allows you to really handpick your audience. So we can set ads and content specifically for people in New Zealand whose behaviours that we want to try and change. So Love Food, Hate Waste has done a lot of research over different people who waste food in New Zealand and sort of identified key markets of people who are potentially high food wasters, but also that we know that we can have access to these people via things like Facebook. So it's a really important tool for us. Not to say that we're not using other things and that, you know, mainstream media and other forms of advertising, but Facebook specifically, especially around the Love Food, Hate Waste launch, has been really powerful for us.
So many things you just said there I want to ask a question about. So, Love Food, Hate Waste. Let's just start with, where did this begin? Where did this concept begin? Because it's a business, yeah?
It's a not-for-profit campaign. So Love Food, Hate Waste is a brand that began in the UK in about 2007 to help people in the United Kingdom reduce the amount of food that they waste. And it's been hugely successful, sort of reducing food waste by about 20%, I think, over that time. And the brand has been used in Scotland, and it's in a couple of places in Australia now, and then we launched in New Zealand in June. So where it sort of came out of a process in New Zealand was that I work for the Waste Management Institute of New Zealand, and we have a whole lot of member organisations throughout the country, including a lot of councils. And they identified that food waste is a huge issue in New Zealand. And they did this by literally going through people's rubbish
bins. Well, that's what I wondered, because you've come up with all these facts. I see your Facebook feed and it'll be like, people in New Zealand throw away, you know, X thousand number of kilos of, I don't know, cauliflower or whatever. Yep. Like, how on earth would you know that? Has someone literally gone through rubbish bins?
Literally gone through rubbish bins. So I think in about five different locations through New Zealand, we did what we call bin audits. And so we got permission from the councils and we selected streets at random and we took people's rubbish and we sorted through it. And we took out all the food items. Well, when I say we, I wasn't. This was before my time. Some other person
got to
have this lovely task. And literally went through and extrapolated out the food by type and weighed it and measured it and recorded it, which has given us these really comprehensive statistics on what it is that Kiwis waste. Like, we know that the bread is the most wasted food item in New Zealand.
That so doesn't surprise me, because how many times do you buy a loaf of bread? And then, like, what happens in my family is we buy a loaf of bread and we don't have bread a lot. So I'll buy a loaf of sliced bread and then everyone's like, oh, yes, eggs on toast. And oh, yes, toast. And then a toasty after school. And then I'm like, gosh, I'm such a bad mum that I don't usually have bread in the house. So then I buy the next. And then the novelty of the sliced bread is worn off. So by week two or three, there might be one or two slices. And then you look at this bread and you're like, oh, that sat there actually for 4 or 5 days. And I haven't thought to use it, so I need to bin that, you know.
Yeah.
And then I won't buy bread for a while, and so on and so forth. So you can see that that happens with bread. And people, I don't think, treat it with respect. It's just a loaf of bread.
It's just a loaf of bread. And it's really devalued when you can pick up a loaf of bread for $1. Why would you bother about using all the bread that you've got or freezing it or turning it into breadcrumbs when you can just go down to the dairy and buy another loaf?
Mm.
Yeah, it is. Bread is a huge problem issue, I think, in New Zealand. But basically this research gave us the capabilities of working out what exactly it is that Kiwis waste. And so once we had all of these statistics around how much food Kiwis wasting, so 122,000 tonnes of food is going from households to the landfill every year. So I'm not talking about what is coming out of supermarkets and restaurants and from farms, but literally what is coming out of people's houses. So that was basically the case for us to do something about it. And so we've opted to sort of jump on board with this Love Food Hate Waste brand. So it's sort of a collaboration between 60 councils and community groups throughout New Zealand and with Wastemans, and we are funded in part by the Ministry for the Environment as well.
Wow. So so your statistics. Now I'm thinking, what about all those people who have got waste masters and are also putting it down there? Because we can't even...
You can't measure that.
This is measured without taking that into account.
Without taking that into account.
Shoot.
It's not including what people compost. It's not including, we've got no stats on milk because people would tip milk down the sink.
Of course, yeah.
So all of those sorts of things. So
it's pretty scary.
It's hugely scary.
It's huge.
But it's now that we are armed with this information, we can do something about it because we sort of know what the troublesome items are in New Zealand. We know that people are not eating their broccoli stalks or the green parts of their leeks, or that surprisingly leftovers are the second most wasted food in New Zealand. And so by leftovers, we mean last night's spag bowl or things like that. So it's sort of a food item that's been prepared to turn it into a meal and is then going to waste.
What a pity that that's not going into school lunchboxes and things for kids.
And we think to an extent it is, but there are so many reasons. So we're launching in November a month-long campaign called Love Your Leftovers, which is basically to encourage people to eat them. And there are so many great things about leftovers. You know, half the work's already been done for you and a lot of things taste a whole lot better the next day. But we've identified so many barriers why people actually don't want to eat their leftovers. Either they're bored of them or they didn't like them the first time around or they forget about them. You know, how many times do you put things in the fridge thinking, okay, my husband will take this for work or my children will eat that after school, and then someone forgets about it, doesn't want it, and then lo and behold, you find it half a week later.
Yes. And you're too scared to eat it because you're worried.
You're too scared to eat it and you've missed that window of opportunity to put it in the freezer.
Yes.
And so reluctantly into the bin it goes.
I think part of the problem is the labelling. So I've just started to use a chef's trick, which is funny because on one of my other podcasts I said I didn't do this. And I don't religiously, but I'm trying really hard to do it. And, you know, it's expensive to buy little labels and you don't need to have dates and da-da-da-da-da all over them that printed on the labels.
Yeah.
So I've just bought a roll of masking tape, just the basic, you know, that paper tape that comes on and off really, really easily, because that's the other thing. You want to relabel your little plastic containers and things. So I've just bought that exactly like chefs do, and a marker pen, and now it's just like right on the tape, chuck the tape on and in, because otherwise, the little containers all get pushed to the back of the fridge as you do your next shop behind the yogurt or whatever, and everyone forgets they're there, and then on a Saturday or Saturday, Sunday, which tends to be my clean out the fridge day and work out. And then I use those in my cooking for the next week. You know, if there's grotty bits of veggies or whatever, I'll make a soup. But often I'll be like, oh, oops, there's that lamb shank from last weekend still sitting there.
Exactly. And you're right about labelling, because we find, well, I personally find, I freeze a lot of things. Mm. And sometimes I don't know if, you know, that Snap-Lock bag of frozen clear liquid in my fridge is frozen wine or frozen
or
chicken stock.
I know. Because when you put it in, you're convinced. You convince yourself you're not going to forget.
I know. And you're like, I know this. I've made a batch of stock, so it's going to be stock. But you're like, also there was that time that I froze a cup of wine because I thought I'll use it next time I make a risotto. And yeah, it is. We have some, we've had some stickers made to help get around this labelling process. So we've had two times. One of these bright, big, bright green reusable stickers that say "Eat me first."
Oh, lovely.
And so we like this idea for families or for sort of shared houses that, you know, when there's food or like you might have two containers of yogurt and you specifically don't want them to open the other yogurt until they've eaten the first one. So we've got those stickers, and then we've got some sort of reusable ones that are you're basically kind of like mini whiteboards that you write the stickers on with a whiteboard marker to label them, and then you can just wipe it off at the end and reuse the sticker on something else.
Are these available for sale?
They're not available for sale, but they are available. They will be available to win, and a lot of our councils around the country will be giving them away at Love Food Hate Waste events over the next year and things like that.
Could you? Oh, we have to have a little chat. Because do you know, these would be amazing for Ronald McDonald House.
Oh.
I'm just thinking, because all the families share, right? So they all have their own basket with their own food in for their room. But then there's a huge big shared fridge. So say I cook something and decide to deliver a whole heap of food down to there. That's fine. But they need to be able to label it to know which day that's been dropped off by someone. And also they have yogurts and butters and milks. And I'm constantly thinking they need to be labelling this more clearly so families know which one, because they don't have time to stand there and go, which date?
Da, 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 da. Yeah, of course.
Those sort of stickers would be amazing for facilities like that as well. Yes, please. They'll be so excited. No, but that's a really good point, because I laughed when you said the yogurt thing, because I was so grumpy this morning. I was cleaning up the kitchen after, you know, the family had all completely charged out the door. Bye, Mum. And I'm like, oh, my goodness. Kitchen's a bomb site. Cleaning up the kitchen, I'm like, oh. That Greek yogurt I bought yesterday has been opened, and the other one was still there, perfectly good. But as a kid, you know, it sort of starts to look a bit like grotty, and there's like, you know, they open the lid, it's like, oh, is this still all right? It was fine. It was only yesterday's actually, but they've opened the new one because it looks clean and lovely, and I was so grumpy. So it's very funny. I like that idea.
Yeah, we think they're very useful, but it's like you're saying, you know, people have these perceptions around food and around best before and use by dates, and I'm living with a couple of other people, and it's funny to see sort of what other people's boundaries are for what they will and won't eat. You know, some people won't touch a banana the moment there's a brown spot on it, or, you know, if a bread is, you know, you've left your bread in the pantry and it's gone slightly stale. And so I think for us it's about challenging people's perception of what is still okay to eat, especially around use-by dates or best-before dates, and then talking to people, you know, giving them strategies to use up that stale bread, whereas, you know, don't throw it out, don't feed it to the birds. Actually, you can make a bread and butter pudding, or you can turn it into breadcrumbs and make schnitzel, or all of these different things.
Mm.
So that's sort of what Love Food Hate Waste is trying to achieve.
So it's an education mission as much as anything, isn't it? Which is fantastic, because I truly believe that's where it starts. I mean, it's funny, just with one of my sons who's banana mad. And it's not that he won't eat. He's actually quite good. But in general, you know, once a banana gets a bit grotty, he's sort of like, I'm not sure I want to eat that. Fair enough. But I've said to him, do you know they have far more flavour when they're like that? So that's your perfect banana for a smoothie, or if you want to make some banana muffins, or, you know, if you want to mash it up and have it with ice cream or whatever. And so now he tells me, or I've heard him tell his brother, oh, you're mad not having that one in the smoothie. That's going to have more flavour. And I'm like, yes, because it is. It's all around just changing the perception from, oh, brown grot, I don't want to open it, to going, actually, all that bruising and brownness is going to be full of flavour. So in my smoothie, I'm not even going to care that that's what it looked like to start with.
Exactly. And it's that same idea around, you know, leftover food. Like, what do you do with that cold, hard lump of leftover mashed potato? Well, actually, there's heaps of things you can do with it. But if no one's taught you or told you that you can make gnocchi, or you can make fish cakes, or that, you know, you can use it to make focaccia or something like that, you're not going to know.
No, you're going to throw it. Yeah, it's a pity, isn't it? It is. Oh, gosh, it is such a hard one. What about you've said a couple of times about the best before dates and the use by dates. I definitely have a problem with one of my children who will literally, I see him stand in front of the fridge and check the use by date and then say, nope, we can't eat this, you know, it's the use by date. And I've tried to explain, you know, companies have to put it there. Yeah. They've got to cover themselves. There's a whole heap of reasons the use by date will be the use by date. So sure, you take the use by date and go, oh, it's today, or oh, it was yesterday. And then you go down a little process before you decide that that does have to be thrown, you know, have a smell, have a think, have and work it out. Or if it's an egg and you're not sure how long it's been sitting there, you know, put it in the water, and if it floats, then we know to chuck it. You know, all those sort of things. And it's really hard, because if something's printed onto something, used by, you know, you will tend to have a portion of the population and say, well, that was printed on there, that must be right, so that date's hit, so finish. Do you have that? Have you noticed that issue with people?
And there is a lot of confusion surrounding the difference between best before and use by. So for us, best before refers to the quality of the food. So by this date, it's going to be, or has been, at its optimal quality, and you can potentially expect that the quality may deteriorate slightly after this date. However, depending on what it is, it's very unlikely that that's actually going to happen. So food is absolutely safe to eat after its best before date. We tell, as you mentioned, use your senses. Look at it, smell it, taste it. Like, you're soon going to know if something is, you know, borderline or off, basically. Whereas use by sort of refers to the safety of the food, whereas best before relates to quality. So, but very few things in New Zealand have a use-by date. It is mainly meat. And so it's basically teaching people that look at the date for meat, and if you're not going to use it before the use-by, put it in the freezer. Like, as simple as that, because if you freeze it before the use-by, well, before or on the use-by date, it will be fine afterwards. But, for a lot of people, they see a date, they take it as law, and there's no going back from that. Whereas I've used to have this thing with my mum all the time about, she's like, oh, but it's past its date. And I, for one, have never had food poisoning. So, and I've eaten some things that are pretty far past their dates, and it's fine.
Well, and also, that's not the only way of getting food poisoning, is it? Exactly. I mean, I cooked chicken for my boys a while back, and I'm not going to name where I bought them, but I bought them, you know, when some special, you know, you could buy two chickens for X amount of dollars. And I bought them and cooked them, and there was nothing wrong with the use-by date or anything. I think it was just a special from the shop. Cooked them perfectly like I would normally cook my roast chicken, and both boys were insanely sick. And when we went to the doctor, one of my children who had been with me when I shopped said to the nurse, it's because mum bought chicken on special. And I'm like, I was outraged, because I thought, oh, that's just what I need in the media, you know, cook Vanessa Baxter poisons own children. And I said, no, it's nothing to do with the chicken. Yeah. It categorically was to do with those chickens. Ultimately, it was Campylobacter.
Right.
I was mortified, and the only thing I could put it back to was those chickens, because my husband and I hadn't eaten them, and the kids were really, really sick. And I thought, that's absolutely insane. There is nothing I could have done about that. And there the shop was reputable. The brand of the chicken was reputable. They weren't on a, you know, after best used by, but there was some reason on reflection, there was some reason all those chickens were sitting there at a special price, I'm convinced. And, you know, my kids did get sick from them. But, you know, you can go to your best intentions to do the right thing. But if we all panic, eating leftovers or following use by dates, you know, I mean, it's just going to be ridiculous amount of wastage. And I think you've just got to get on with life and say sometimes things happen for who knows why, what reason, and just use your sense.
And that was just, you know, bad luck. There's no way you could have known buying those chickens, and probably the retailers didn't know. And it was.
Honestly, it was just pure bad luck. And I think, you know, if I then panicked and then every time, you know, started to sort of check all my dates and things, you just can't live like that. So I think you've just got to be really sensible and just, you know, sometimes things happen. And I mean, you know, I'll buy those gorgeous little balls of mozzarella and then the boys will want to eat them all at once. I'm like, no, they're really expensive. They need to last the whole week. You can have one a day, you know, the little baby ones. And then they'll be like, no, Mum, the best before date. Oh, dear. So with trying to educate, you've said that you've tried to kind of zoom in on the people who do tend to waste the most. Is that been economic, a certain economic portion of the population? Has that been an area of the population that you've identified? What is it that are the identifiers of people who waste?
Well,
or how have you looked at it,
okay,
I guess?
Okay, so everyone wastes food. And so what we've sort of worked out through the research that we did is that sort of high food wasters are people on busy people on quite high incomes who can just afford to throw food out, who may have gone and done a supermarket shop on the weekend and they get home really late and they get takeaways and all that salmon that they'd plan to eat, they throw away. Then we have, obviously, and this will come as no surprise to you, busy families. You know, mums with young children, children who are coming home with an apple that's had a bite taken out of it. Those sorts of things where you can't predict, you know, one day your children loves macaroni cheese, the next day they're not going to eat it. Mm. Those sorts of things. And then sort of the third, what we deem high food wasting sort of demographic is students and people who sort of live in shared households where they are doing sort of cooking collectively, but they may not necessarily be a family, or they may be a big family and everyone is on completely different timetables and coming and going and eating at different times and eating at different things. And in those cases, it's things like leftovers and that are getting missed because, you know, you leave it in the fridge thinking someone will eat it and then they don't. And then sort of no one is taking responsibility for the food that's coming in and out of that household. It's a collective thing. Everybody contributes and those sorts of things. So, yeah, everyone wastes food. But for us, those are sort of key demographics that our research has shown us. And I think specifically at the moment, we're really sort of working with families. We see, because it's this double edge, you know, you can influence the parents, but you can also influence the children by what the parents do to sort of set them up for this lifetime of knowing that if their bananas go brown, I can put them in the freezer. And so it's sort of that you're influencing two lots of people at once.
I totally agree with that, because kids are just absorb all this information.
Yeah.
And that's what I hope, you know, even if, because mine are sort of like, well, one's happy to cook and the other one's cooking's a bit uncool at the moment. But I'm hoping just by absorbing some of that information or what they see me doing in the kitchen will make them better flatmates or whatever when they're at uni and know some of those tips and tricks for using up things. I mean, broccoli stalks, you mentioned at the beginning of this podcast interview. Oh, my God, they make the best soup.
They do.
They make the best soup. It's about to go in my cookbook. It's going to make the best soup. You use the whole thing, you know, because it's full of flavour. And the other thing that really upsets me, Sarah, is when I see in our Western countries herbs and they've just cut just the leaves in the little thing, and then for $4, you know, you get this tiny little few little bits of coriander all beautifully chopped for you, and you just get these lovely leaves in their little, you know, plastic container. And I'm like, actually, you can use the stalks, and the roots are the bits that have the most flavour that can go into stir fries, fried rice, make your curries with them. That's the bit the Asians want. And someone's chopping them and throwing them before they've even got to the supermarket. So, it's bizarre, isn't it? And there's a whole almost society re-education.
Yes.
Because it is shocking in the West. It is really shocking because I lived in Asia for 16 years before I came to New Zealand. And I think that's where my eyes were opened as to being able to use the whole vegetable. Yeah. I mean, an Asian, or I'm probably being like way too broad, but say a Vietnamese woman cooking will use the entire spring onion. She wouldn't even cross her mind to throw the green bits away. You know, she'll chop the entire thing and any tiny little bits of maybe ends of leaves or whatever will go into stock for the rice or whatever for the next day. I mean, there's no way they'd throw that away.
I know, it's insane. I think for me, I remember when I was living in Australia and I first learned that you could eat the leaves off the beetroot. But you never buy beetroot that has leaves attached at the supermarket.
This is the
problem. And so then when I was at my local farmer's market and I saw it and I bought it and it's like two vegetables for the price of one. Mm-hmm. I was like, this is insane. And what are they doing with it otherwise for supermarkets? They're taking,
they take them off.
Small chance it may go to feed stock, but probably not. It goes in a compost, it goes in a bin. Like it's, and not that's the supermarket's fault because retailers want the beetroot and no one wants to deal with the leaves because most of us have just considered that they are waste and it's something else that we have to take home and, you know, throw away.
It's the same with celery.
Yes.
Because you can eat the celery leaves. I mean, they're gorgeous and the tiny little ones can be a garnish. And what else was I just thinking of when you were saying that? Pumpkin flowers and zucchini flowers and things. I mean, in Italy, they're all stuffed and fried and, oh, my God, they're so beautiful. And you can't get them here. Yeah. It's considered like a really gourmet item that you have to pay extra and actually get them as extra. But they must be being grown with those vegetables in the first place. Oh, no, it's heartbreaking. I mean, obviously fresh produce is one thing and leftovers. What about packaged stuff that people are buying, like, say, for example, grains or whatever? Did you see much of that or are people holding on to that because it is easy to store because it's dry?
We see that people are throwing out cooked versions.
Yeah.
So you cook too much rice, which we all do. Mm. Rice, pasta, those are big things that get thrown out because people cook too much. In terms of the dried stuff, it wasn't sort of rating highly in terms of the majority of things that we were throwing out. So it was predominantly fresh produce and meat, a little bit of dairy. Other surprising thing that was within our top 20 most wasted foods is cake.
Oh, yeah, because you make the whole cake and then three quarters of it gets eaten and the rest
gets thrown.
And
then it gets stale or, you know, I think for me, I remember at my birthday, my flatmate made me this beautiful, lovely cake. But after 3 days, I was really a little bit sick of eating cake and I was feeling bad about myself and I no longer wanted to keep eating this cake every day. And so I was really reluctant. But I, you know, and I kind of wanted to put on Twitter that I had three quarters of a birthday cake. Did anyone want it? But then my flatmate was like, that's quite weird. Like, well, it is, but also someone may want a cake. Like, and so I think it's encouraging this concept of sharing, like of giving your leftovers, well, not even your leftovers, but giving food. If you're going away over summer and you open your fridge and you've still got half a bottle of milk and some cheese and some eggs that you're not going to use, take them to your neighbour.
Yeah.
Knock on their door and be like, hey, look, I'm going away. Would you like this food?
Oh, yeah. I mean, totally. And I mean, mostly my family eats what I cook. But when I go crazy with cooking and do a whole heap of recipes in a day for, you know, because I'm writing about them or whatever, the neighbours definitely get little containers. I mean, if I'm going to Ronald McDonald House, I'll take stuff there too. But, yeah, I try to sort of think about who I can give those things to so they don't sit there. I mean, cake, I try to not ice it and then I'll slice it all up and freeze it in individual portions so that that can go into a school lunchbox or whatever for the kids. So I've sort of changed, I think, my way of thinking over time about things like that too, especially baking, because we do all eat less of it, I think, than we used to. You know, there's been obviously the big kind of health push to not be living on sweet baking and stuff. So I'll do a bit, and when I do it, I tend to freeze it off for the days when someone does say, oh, I would kill for a piece of cake. And
I take mine into work.
And share.
I take it, and they didn't comment that I've only been at my job since February, but they've never had so much cake until Sarah started. And a lot of it, like in my defence, is things that I've been recipe testing for the Love Food Hate Waste website. Yeah. But a lot of it too is just I like to cook and I like to eat it, but I don't want to eat it all.
Yes, exactly. Well, I'm exactly the same. So I hear you, but I don't want to waste either.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And you can freeze it, but also it's who else can I give this to who's going to enjoy it and appreciate it?
So what are some of the things that you've tested? Can you share with us?
Well, I tested when we launched, we had a recipe for a banana peel cake.
A banana peel cake.
And it sounds obscure. And it was kind of a little bit of like it's a legitimate recipe. It makes a delicious cake, but it was sort of a little gimmicky thing when you sort of launched that. Oh, this is, you know, this is quite different because the cake doesn't have any actual bananas in it. It's literally made with 6 banana peels, and you process them up with a little bit of water. So in a food processor, you're screwing your nose up at me.
I am not screwing my nose up, but I'm definitely raising my eyebrows.
And it makes quite a delicious cake. I served it to people without telling them that it was banana peel, and everyone commented on how nice it was. But the interesting thing was, so we made that cake, which was specifically a banana peel cake, but my colleague Jenny tested just making the regular Edmonds banana cake, but instead of doing, she basically used whole bananas, so yes, the banana flesh and the banana skin, and she processed the banana skins as per our other recipe, and it was delicious. Like, it was really...
So I did not realise that banana skins were completely edible.
They are. So there are issues regarding pesticides and things like that. But the thing is, you're eating 2 banana peels. Like it's the quantity is from our understanding through, and we did consult with some researchers down in Otago University surrounding this before we launched with this recipe. And it's not going to be enough to have any sort of negative impact on you. But I mean, that's a bizarre sort of concept. And we're not telling everyone, you know, to go and, you know, keep on your banana peels in order to make a cake. I mean, you can compost them and whatnot. But it is just to get people to think outside the box and in terms of, you know, challenging people on what else they can do with food that they would usually throw away.
Any other quirky, crazy ones to share?
Quirky, crazy ones. Oh. We have this thing that we do called a member of the public actually gave us this recipe, and it's for jungle gelato.
Right.
And it's the idea that for when your children send home fruit in their lunchbox and they have, you know, a bite taken out and, you know, you give it to them for afternoon tea and they don't want to eat it. So collect all that fruit and then freeze it and then basically turn it into like a thick smoothie by blending it all together and adding a bit of flavouring. So this lady said she uses some raro powder but using sort of something like that to sort of blend it all together so it's sort of that thick sorbet texture, and then sort of serving it in a bowl with a spoon, you know, for children for afternoon tea is, you know, that sort of different idea of, you know, it doesn't really matter what fruit you've got, but making the most of it in that
way. I chuck it all in smoothies and make them have it for afternoon tea if it comes home. It really upsets me. The only thing I find that comes home sometimes is sandwiches that are just if it was just, I don't know, cheese or whatever, you could just turn it into a toasty. But it does bother me if I've done some salami or ham or it's got other stuff in it that's sort of been sitting around all day.
Yeah, and sandwiches are something that, you know, it is very hard to repurpose
a sandwich that's already been made.
Yeah, something like, you know, a peanut butter or jam sandwich and that, you know, you could if you were making a bread and butter pudding or something like that. Or you could toast it.
Yes.
Something like that. But you're right, one that if it's had sort of meat and salad and maybe mayonnaise in it, it's
kind of done.
It is kind of done. And I can see that it's problematic if sometimes your children eat sandwiches like that and sometimes they don't. But
yeah, that's where it becomes a problem. But then I think that's where the whole cooking enough at dinner that a couple of portions can go into a school lunchbox, because that's what mine far prefer. They'd far prefer to have a bit of last night's dinner for lunch the next day, which is fantastic. So that's where all my leftovers go, which is awesome.
Yes, and it's about planning that. Mm. That's kind of one of the things that we've identified, is that planning is crucial. And so it's planning in terms of shopping. Like,
yes.
Like we sort of say, like, if you buy food that you don't really have a purpose for and you're not a creative cook who opens the pantry and, you know, without a plan and pulls things together, then you are opening yourself up to the possibility that that food that you're buying without a purpose is going to go to waste. And then it's planning to have leftovers, or having a plan if you do have leftovers, what you're going to do with it.
Mm. And if you weren't around, if there was no Love Food Hate Waste campaign, what is the purpose of it? So what is the impact that you guys see? What was the purpose behind the brand in the first place?
It's to reduce household food waste specifically. So it's to get people to adopt a couple of new behaviours that in the long run is going to decrease the amount of food that they're throwing away. And we think, like, food waste is bad for the environment. So when food decomposes in a landfill without oxygen, it releases methane. So if food waste was a country, it would be the third largest emitter of greenhouse gases. So this is worldwide. So it's bad for the environment. It's a waste of resources. So every piece of food that you're throwing out, time and money and energy and water and all of these different things have gone into creating that. But and the other big thing that we've identified is you're throwing away money every time. You know, you put half a banana in the bin, that may be 30 cents. But, you know, you don't think of it in terms of like a monetary value, but it all adds up. So the average Kiwi household is throwing away about $563 of food every year. That changes, obviously, depending on how much, you know, how much your food bill is, how many people are living in your household. But that's sort of a considerable amount of money, especially, like, you know, if you are, you know, not earning a huge amount of money, or you've got a mortgage, or you've got lots of children, like, that all adds up. And so I think for us, it's food waste is an issue that there are so many different facets to. And so not only is it, you know, just preventing how much food we're throwing away, but it's helping people to save money, and it's helping, you know, the environment, which is why the Ministry for the Environment is on board in terms of funding this campaign, because, you know, it does do a lot of damage. But it's sort of this invisible environmental ill. Like, people see, you know, your car with your big exhaust pipes, or we know that littering's bad and that, you know, we shouldn't put chemicals down the drain because they're going to end up in the sea. But so many people don't realise the impact that they have when they throw, you know, an apple into the rubbish bin. And so it's sort of about bringing that to people's attention. But sort of food waste is very high on the global agenda right now. Like, around the world, a lot of work is being done to tackle food waste, because like a third of all the world's food goes to waste.
And that's so a horrible statistic.
It is. It's a shocking statistic. Like, a third, like, you think of all the groceries that you buy.
A third of them are being thrown.
A third of them is being thrown. A third of them is going to waste. A third of all the people's time and energy that went into making that is just going to go to waste. But yet, other people in the world don't have enough food to eat.
I know.
Like, for me, that was a big driver about coming on board with this campaign.
Yes.
Was that we are so wasteful, you know, whether or not we intend to be, but yet so many people in the world are really food insecure. And I think it's hard to grapple with the idea of the impact of us reducing our food waste in New Zealand, what that's going to mean for people overseas who are starving. But it's not even people overseas. It's people in New Zealand who are starving. So there's some really great things happening in the space, especially around food rescue groups.
Yes,
who are
seen that.
Who are working with food retailers and supermarkets and restaurants and taking their excess food and distributing it to people who need it.
Because unfortunately in the past there were laws against that, and that was one of the problems. Because I've worked obviously in that industry for a long time, and there were serious restrictions on people, like five-star hotels,
right,
off buffets and things. You know, if it was a whole cake or something that hadn't been touched,
yes,
then it could be passed on. But if it had been something that had been touched, then it couldn't. So you'd have these massive salad bowls and things, and it all went in the rubbish bin at the end of the night.
Right.
And cakes that had one slice taken, the rest of it went in the rubbish bin, and it was absolutely horrifying to me, but there were these really quite strict health and hygiene rules around it, which I also understand. So it's difficult, isn't it? But it is frustrating as a family. So we can all make a difference within our home, and you know, I think your campaign is fantastic, and I think education is vital. But there's going to be a lot of people, I think, also who go, but what about five-star hotels and supermarkets and things? So hopefully that will start to change. And there can be some sharing off the back end of those too, because
food waste is inevitable when it comes to anyone who is selling food. Mm. Basically, supply and demand, there is always going to be excess. There are lifespans on these things. It's always going to happen. But there is a lot of things that are being done, like so many steps that have been taken right now to sort of change the way all these organisations think about their excess food waste and what they do. Recent health and safety laws have specifically stated that if you donate food, you are not liable for it. So in the past, it had been it was actually quite sort of murky waters.
Yeah, it was murky.
About, you know, and people were, as you said, reluctant to donate food in case, for whatever reason, there was an issue with it and somebody got sick and then they were to blame. Mm. Whereas now you can donate food and you are not liable for it, providing that the food, you know, you are not donating that really stinky old chicken breast that is not safe for anyone to eat. So it's really encouraging. And people like Countdown are doing fantastic things in terms of a lot of their food rescue things. They've recently set up, I think it's a $100,000 fund for food rescue groups to apply for, to receive money in order to continue to rescue food from all these different places. I know in West Auckland,
yes,
Countdown works with Fair Food.
Mm-hmm.
And they go around there on a daily basis to 6 or 7 or 8 Countdowns every day, and they're collecting not only their fresh produce but also a lot of their bakery bread, which supermarkets only sell on the day that it's made. So they collect a lot of that things, but also things that have damaged packaging for whatever reason and past their best before dates and things like that, and then are redistributing it to a whole variety of different organisations in West Auckland. And that's just one example. There are food waste organisations throughout the country. All operate in slightly different ways, but all are doing really fantastic work to help sort of to minimise that food waste and just to redistribute that food that is available and to sort of get it to the people who do need it.
Mm, yeah, I think it's fantastic. I mean, there can't be anything wrong with the mission. I know you had your launch at Eat My Lunch, which has also got their way of using food in a really fantastic What word am I looking for? They've got a great concept around the use of food, where, you know, someone buys it and they get theirs, and then they donate to the kids that don't have food in South Auckland. It used to be, but now a lot of schools, I know, thousands of lunches that they've given away. So there are certainly many, many people and many organisations jumping on board to try to think about distributing food around the place in better ways. And I think, you know, there are many families, as you've highlighted in this chat, that don't think about that 30 cents they're throwing or the $1 they're throwing, and it's just a rejigging of people's minds as they're cooking, looking in their fridges.
And we don't expect a complete overhaul of the way people shop and cook and eat. It's just, I think, working out potentially the thing that you're doing that's causing you to waste the most food and then trying to fix that. Like for myself as an example, I grew up and my mum did one weekly shop, and that was it. We topped up with bread and milk during the week, but that was sort of it. And I have that mentality now, but my lifestyle is very different to when I grew up in Whakatane and I was one of four children and we lived 10 minutes from town and we were home most nights of the week, whereas I'm out, I do things in the evenings, I'm not necessarily home. I cook with my friend who I live with and she is a shift worker. And so we may have the best intentions of doing a weekly shop every week and then eating through that food, but we don't get through the food. And I live 600 metres away from a Countdown that is open from 6 a.m. until midnight. So for me, I've identified that I need to change the way that I shop and shop on a sort of an as-need basis, because it's really convenient for me just to go down the road and do that, as opposed to trying to predict on a Sunday how many meals I'm going to need at home that week and what I'm going to want them to be. And
I think, oh, gosh, I think that is This is a great way to end our podcast. I think that that is fantastic. And I love that you have said that, because that is me completely. I think that there are a lot of people out there saying you need to plan and you need to have your recipes and you should sit down on a Sunday with your cookbooks and you should come up with your weekly plan, and that will work for some people.
Yes.
Absolutely. I think that's fantastic. And if that works for you, yay, great. Go and grab one of those books that gives you your meal plan. And I have tried that. That absolutely categorically does not work for me. I'm bored stiff with that idea. I'm much more of a creative cook, and I want to just see how I feel on the day as well. And I might have planned for lamb on a Wednesday, and by Wednesday it's the last thing I feel like. So I just want to be able to make that choice. I also really believe about shopping local. That's really important to me. Yes. So I like to go to my local butcher when I'm going past, and I'll just maybe see him a couple of times a week and grab meat. And I like to shop at my local fruit and veg. So I do that when I'm going past, or make a special trip, and then I'll do the supermarket for those absolutely boring household basics of tissues and toilet paper and all the rest of the stuff that you need to get. So that works for me, and it's okay. And I think the listeners, I hope when they're listening to this, go yay at the end of this, because what you're saying is it's all okay, actually. Work out what works for you. Work out what it is. And if you're a person who, you know, you've been listening to this, you're like, oh my gosh, I know perfectly well I'm a person who has always hated leftovers, I need to rethink that, then rethink that. Or if you're a person who loves to have that beautiful fresh fruit bowl on the dining room table looking beautiful all the time because that's what your mum used to do, whatever, but no one eats fruit in your house, maybe rethink that one.
Exactly.
And if you're someone who loves to daily shop because you actually quite enjoy wandering around and seeing what's in season, then do that. It's okay.
Exactly.
But just have a think about, what works for you. We are all busy nowadays. Actually, you know, using what could be waste, what could potentially be waste, using that up can actually help with some of that time management. If you can come up with really clever ideas of what to use, you won't need to go to the shop so often because it's actually sitting there in front of you all the time.
Exactly.
Yeah. So yay. Right. I'm inspired on a couple of things. But I think I'm doing an okay job, but I'm still inspired. I'm still inspired. And it's so great to talk. I think you're very enigmatic and excited, and you're a great voice for the mission of Love Food Hate Waste, and I'm really excited to continue to follow you on Facebook and all your social media, and it's fun. I love seeing you post, like when you post something like, you know, use the whole leeks, don't throw the green away. I'm like, yes, I hear you, yay. Like, I'm always wanting to answer, that's what I do. So yay, good on you, love it, and I'm so glad that we finally connected.
Oh, thank you so much for having us. I mean, we're very excited. It's a 3-year campaign, but there's just, there's so much we can do. And we're already receiving such great feedback from people who are saying, oh, I never knew I could use my leftovers in a pie, or I never knew that I should freeze my bread. And so it's really positive going forward.
Yeah, that's awesome. Well, we will keep an eye on you and maybe touch base again next year.
Yeah, fantastic.
Okay, thank you. Sarah, thanks. Wow. Well, I reckon no matter where you are in the world, that will have been an extraordinary chat to have shared with us. Sarah's amazing. She's so excited about what she's doing, and that got me excited. And we shared obviously lots of tips and tricks and ideas around not wasting food. The statistics are pretty scary, as you heard. So no matter which country you're living in, no matter where you are, if you could have a think about what it is that you need to change, what it is that you could up your ante over in trying to eliminate some of this wastage that is obviously a worldwide problem. Or maybe you can share some of your food in a different way than you have currently thought to date. Thank you so much for listening. I know it was a long episode, but I hope that you really enjoyed it. It was such fun to chat with Sarah here in the Podcast New Zealand studio. And obviously we're fully supported by Global Podcast, which is fantastic. And, you know, I've got to give another big shout out to Tamsin. She is this gorgeous 14-year-old who's in Singapore and starting to do her own gigs with her guitar and writing her own songs. And she has done the intro and outro music that you enjoy each week here on my podcast. So huge thanks to you as well, Tams. She listens to my podcast too, which I think is absolutely awesome. So see you next week. It'll be another good one. Ciao.
that's good. Ooh, 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 ooh. Ooh, ooh,
Food, Family and Friends Podcast. Proudly presented by worldpodcasts.com.